Wonderful. Thank you, Ian. Ursula?
Okay. Hopefully my connection will stay, because I lost it before. I had to re-sign it again.
If you do have a problem with your slides, Ursula, just tell me which slide I need to put it onto.
Okay, thanks. Okay, I think Winston and Ian have given a really good introduction into what I'm going to talk about, which is the regulation of these products. At the moment, the dietary supplements are covered by the dietary supplement regulations, and the short food can either be covered by the Australia-New Zealand Food Standards Code, or where the permissions there are too low, a lot of them aren't covered by the dietary supplement regs as well. So there's sort of two places where these products can sit. So I'll go first and talk about the dietary supplement regulations. These were first promulgated in 1985, so they're nearly 25 years old. And they were originally intended to cover the manufacture, labelling and advertising of products that are not foods or medicines in the true sense of the word. So it was to cover those vitamins and minerals that were found in tablet capsule form that supplemented the diet. Since then, the range of products has expanded significantly, and we now have a range of products which includes those that are presented as foods, and we call these food-type dietary supplements, as well as products that are intended for therapeutic use. Oops. So the NZSA has a mandate to protect consumers by providing an effective food regulatory program covering food produced and consumed in New Zealand, as well as all imports and exports of food products. So it's quite obvious to us, and probably to you now, that the therapeutic type dietary supplements don't fit within this mandate. Both the dietary supplement regulations and the Food Standards Code present barriers to innovation in the development of food products. Your permissions in the code, this is the food code, that do not provide adequate cover for food products sold under the dietary supplement regulations. And this is often the vitamin and mineral levels in the food code are quite low because they have been put in there because these products are sold to the whole population. So it's really, you've got to take into account the vitamins and minerals that people are getting from their food as well as the supplemented intake. And some of the permissions in the dietary supplement regulations are outdated and not as extensive as those that are permitted in the code, and artificial sweeteners are 1 kt. So some permissions in the code have recently been amended to allow some foods that have previously been sold under the dietary supplement regulations to be sold as foods, and one of these are the formulated beverages, and some of those sports drink products that Ian had on her previous presentation are now covered under the code, and these originally were dietary supplements. So what we propose to do is to amend the dietary supplement regulations and to have a new supplemented food standard. The current dietary supplement regulations will be amended to exclude food type dietary supplements, so they will only cover the therapeutic types. So these are pretty much the products that come in tablet capsule form. There may be some powders, but they're intended to have a health benefit rather than a nutrition benefit. We'll have a new supplemented food standard which will cover the food type dietary supplements, and this will pick up a lot of those sports foods, and it will pick up a lot of foods that have higher levels of vitamins and minerals and some other nutrients added that aren't currently permitted in the food standards code. Until such time as there are standards in the food standards code, in which case they will then become food. The $1 million question is the status of this proposal. The Ministry of Health started working on this about 10 years ago. When NZSA was established, it became obvious that this was the organisation that should be looking after the food type dietary supplements, and we didn't have the expertise to really look after the therapeutic type ones. But we have been working with the Ministry of Health over the last 4 years, and we've really moved this proposal on, and we are hopeful that it will come to fruition early next year. But we've said that every year for the last couple of years now, so don't hold your breath. I want to have a look at the current regulation. And we have basically three sets of regulation for products that encompass food right through to medicine, so that includes your prescription medicines. Under food, we have general food, so that's like your bread, your milk, all the products you buy at the supermarket. And these are currently regulated under the Food Act and the Food Standards Code, which is administered by NZSA. In the middle, we have the Dietary Supplement Regulations, and these currently regulate food-type and therapeutic-type dietary supplements. The dietary supplement regs were made under the Food Act, and they are currently administered by NZSA as well. And then we have medicine, so These were made under the Medicines Act and under the Medicines Regulation, and they are currently administered by MedSafe and the Ministry of Health. What we propose to do with the change is to split the dietary supplements into food type and therapeutic type. And we'll have the food type will still be under the Food Act, but they'll be administered by NZFSA under the Supplemented Food Standard. And the therapeutic type will go off to MedSafe or the Ministry of Health and will be under the Dietary Supplement Regulations, which will be amended to remove the food type products. So I want to talk about the Supplemented Food Standard because that's what we'll be keeping here at NZFSA and what a lot of the products, especially that Ian was talking about, will be covered under the standard. The objectives are to protect public health and safety while maintaining consumer choice, because that's one of our things that we have to do as part of NZFSA. We need to support economic growth. We want to maintain existing rights for New Zealand consumers, as well as our manufacturers, importers and exporters, to access and supply these food type dietary supplements, because they are on the market and there is a, the consumers do want them because they are selling. And lastly, we want to align the requirements of the Food Standards Code with this new Supplemented Food Standard to the maximum extent possible. So wherever we can, we've incorporated the food standards out of the Food Standards Code into our Supplemented Food Standard. The intention is that long term, all of these products that will be regulated under the Supplemented Food Standard will be regulated under the Food Standards Code. The standard is going to be in two parts. Part one will be the new Supplemented Food Standard, and the other part is the current dietary supplement regulation is amended to exclude the therapeutic type dietary supplement. And this is to allow a 2-year transition for current manufacturers and suppliers so that they can sell all their stock that they've got and give them some time to change their products to meet the new labelling and composition requirements of Part 1. During this 2-year transition, you have to comply with either Part 1 or Part 2. You can't pick and mix how you want to sell your product. Okay, so what is a Supplemented Food Standard? We've put a definition into the standard. It's a product that's represented as a food that has a substance or substances added to it, or that has been modified in some way to perform a physiological role beyond the provision of a simple nutritive requirement. And that's quite important. We've also got a prohibition on the formulation and marketing of supplemented food for infants and children, so none of these products will be sold to children under 4. The standard also defines what is not a supplemented food, so it cannot be a dietary supplement, it cannot be a medicine, a controlled drug, or a restricted substance. It cannot be a formulated meal replacement or a formulated supplemented food, because these have specific nutritional permissions in the code and we want to maintain those. And it can't be a formulated caffeinated beverage, which are like your caffeine drinks. As I said, we're going to align with the code as much as we can, so labelling, warning and advisory statements, what are your technological additives, so your sweeteners, your flavouring, processing aids will align with the code, as well as there's a list of restricted and prohibited substances in the code which you cannot add to food, so these will not be able to be added to supplemented food. Some code standards are outside the scope, so you can't have alcoholic beverages, so anything with alcohol in it won't be supplemented food. Carbon sits outside that. Novel foods and the vitamin and mineral permissions also sit outside. Some of the other features are you cannot make therapeutic claims on supplemented food. When the proposed health claim standard gets through, that will be incorporated into the Supplemented Food Standard and you will be able to make health claims, but currently this isn't a standard in the code. We're going to prohibit intoxicating substances, and we've used intoxicating substances rather than specifying any particular substances so that we don't have to keep amending or adding to a list. And it's really to avoid substances like BZP getting into the food supply. Vitamins and minerals can be added to any supplemented food, but there will be a maximum upper level based on 50% of the adult upper level in the 2006 nutrient reference values for Australia and New Zealand. This is really to provide some protection for intakes. Just as Winston was saying, there are some vitamins and minerals that you can take too much of, so we've tried to put in this level here to minimise that effect. And also, because these products won't only be sold to adults, they will be sold to children, we're requiring anywhere where these maximum levels are being put in for products to carry an advisory statement that the product is intended for use by persons over the age of 14 years so that they're not misused. There will be restrictions for some substances, like products with vitamin K will require a warfarin warning, St. John's wort will only be permitted in tea bags, and we're actually putting a prohibition on black cohosh because there are safety issues with that at the moment, and we can add to this list at any time if safety issues occur in the future. And I've just put this last slide in here that has a couple of links to our consultation documents. The top one we released in 2007, and that has the draft standard in it if you want to go in and have a look at the whole standard. It has changed a little bit, but basically it's the same. The changes were as a result of the consultation we undertook at that time. And the second link is to the original consultation document, which outlines the policy scope of the supplemented food standard. And that's my presentation.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Right, well, if everyone will just hold on one moment just while I unmute everyone, and then we can have some questions. So that should be unmuting everyone now, or not. Right, there you go. All right, questions are open to the floor.
Ken Atkinson from NZPA here. I was curious as to where this leaves one of our more valuable exports sold by Fonterra called lactoferrin, which is commonly sold as a dietary supplement in New Zealand and overseas. That's for Ursula.
Yeah, I get that. I'm just thinking. It won't affect these products. Such, unless it's going to be a tablet capsule form. And I think lactoferrin also comes under the dairy product. It's a different piece of legislation as well. It's quite a complicated one.
So because it's classified as a dairy product, it will be exempted from the dietary supplements rules?
Depends how it's being sold. Is it, if it's just being exported as an ingredient, it will be. If it's been packed up into a tablet capsule form, it would have to meet the dietary supplement regulations at the time it's exported out of the country, is my understanding.
Mm-hmm. And there's one other odd little thing out from out of left field I was interested in. There's a natural substance called PDE5 inhibitors, which are commonly known as horny goat weed, which some people put into various stimulants that are sold in New Zealand. It seems under the way this legislation has been framed, or these regulations have been framed, that that will be excluded because it actually imitates the effect of pharmaceuticals that are being excluded.
It would depend if it actually contained a scheduled medicine or not. If it was purely just a herbal ingredient, they would be classified as therapeutic-type dietary supplements. My understanding is they would stay under the amended dietary supplement regulations and be administered by the Ministry of Health.
Thank you.
It's Winston here. Something that I'm not sure everybody is clear on, but I'm not sure if everyone does, that the regulations that you're speaking about will apply in this part of the world. So if we export lactoferrin to Kazakhstan, they can put it in their food even if we didn't permit it.
Thank you.
So in terms of what affects export, it doesn't actually have to comply with our legislation to be exported elsewhere.
Well, technically it should meet our dietary supplement regulations at the point of export.
Okay.
Great. I've got a question that's been sent in from a freelancer. And this is to all of our speakers. Whoever would like to answer it can step up. What about caffeine energy shots? Because they are so much a part of the news at the moment. Will they say they'll be covered by the legislation? And sort of any comments on their safety or nutritional value?
I can comment on the regulatory side of it. The caffeine energy shots are currently covered by the dietary supplement regulations, and the intention is that they will continue to be covered by the supplemented food standard.
Okay, great. Any comments on safety or nutritional value?
Well, caffeine has been shown to be an ergogenic or performance-enhancing aid in quite a few different sporting situations. So for serious athletes, caffeine may be quite useful, but the beneficial amount is reasonably low, 1 to 3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, which would be for a 70 kg male, maximum of 210 milligrams of caffeine, which you can obtain from a couple of cups of coffee. So caffeine can be useful in sport, but at reasonably low levels.
Thanks.
I can deal with the issue that it was sold at every cafe outlet on the Otago University campus at the time of exams, does it?
Used for its stimulant effect then, isn't it? I can tell you that NZFSA is undertaking a risk profile for caffeine. We've contracted ESR to do this work for us. So they're looking at baseline intake of caffeine in the New Zealand population and then doing some modelling around intake by adding in some of these caffeine shots or some of the caffeinated beverages and just seeing how many people go above the 3 milligram per kilogram level, because that's apparently the expected level now for starting to get some of the side effects, you know, the anxiety and what have you. So we're hoping that that information will be available about the end of January.
Oh, excellent, thanks. All right, and any other questions from anyone?
Yes, I just wondered on the caffeine-loaded drinks, is there actually in the present regulations, is there actually a difference between the caffeine drinks which are regarded as a dietary supplement and other drinks containing caffeine? My understanding is that there is actually a limit on how much caffeine you can have in just an ordinary drink containing caffeine, and there is no limit in terms of it being put in as a dietary supplement. And that's what's causing the friction with Australia.
That's part of it. It's because we have slightly different food and medicine regulation in Australia and New Zealand. But basically, you're correct. The formulated caffeinated beverage standard is the standard in the Food Standards Code, and that allows a maximum of 320 milligrams per litre of caffeine in the drink product. And the dietary supplement regs under which the energy shots are being sold, there is no level for caffeine, although the shots will tend to be above that level that's permitted in the code. And that's part of the reason why we're undertaking this risk profile.
Mm-hmm.
Have a look at that.
I had a further question on a different aspect of all this, and that was what, looking to the future, what the panellists see as the likely impact on the move of New Zealand food producers or supplement producers towards what's generally called nutraceuticals or functional foods. Some of those going to fall into the definition of a dietary supplement because of their, for instance, containing probiotics.
The intention when we split the dietary supplements, the food type and the therapeutic type, is that the therapeutic type will generally be products that are in tablet capsule form, somewhere in a pharmaceutical dose form, whereas the products that are in food form, so in a muesli bar, a yogurt, a drink, will tend to be supplemented foods and fall under the supplemented food standard.
And is the weakness of that not shown up by the issue over caffeine? If it's a dietary supplement, it can have unlimited amount of caffeine in it, whereas if it's in a tablet form, there is a limit on it.
necessarily. What we need to do is to look at the safety of the product, and at the moment, this is why we're undertaking this risk profile, to see if there is a safety issue with caffeine at higher levels. We don't know at this stage. We don't have the science to back up making that statement.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be fair to say we know it's not recommended for pregnant women and some sick and children, so the safe things in that area are known already, but as Vishal has said, we have to look at the safety for other ordinary, sensibly healthy members of the population.
Yeah, thanks, Winston. That's true. The, all the energy shots and the formulated caffeinated beverage drinks do have a warning statement on them, not recommending these products for a pregnant woman or for children.
Is there likely to be any special provision for dietary supplements which may interfere with, for instance, with cancer treatments or other medical treatments at relatively low doses?
Those would probably tend to be in the therapeutic type, and that would be something for the Ministry of Health to look at.
Wonderful. Thanks, Kent. Any other questions? All right. Well, I think it seems like then everyone's had their time to ask their questions, so I'll wrap up the briefing. I'd like to say thanks again to our presenters for their time and effort, and also to, of course, to everyone else for joining. The sound recording, as usual, of this briefing will be up on our website within the hour, and the slides will also be available to registered journalists, and they will be in our resource library again sort of during that time period. Please do call us, any of you with any questions that you may have or any contact details that you may need if you would like to speak further with any of our presenters. And have a fantastic afternoon, everyone.